Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Boom, boom, shake the room. Welcome to the Doom Room. I'm Alex, and I'm doomed.
Straight out of the womb, boom, boom, it's the Doom Room. I'm Justin, I'm doomed.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about Season 1, Episode 8 of Doom Patrol, titled Danny Patrol. Now, before we get to any sort of recap or anything like that, we should talk about what
let's
happened.
Let's take it back.
Let's rewind the clock a little bit. Talk about what happened on the last episode of the podcast. Now, we were in the middle of taping the podcast, and I don't remember specifically. I think we were talking about Cyborg section.
Yep.
And so Pete started to talk about, I had to briefly mute. I was doing some work in the middle of that, so I briefly muted. Pete was talking about, so I completely missed this section until I was going back and editing it, so we didn't even realize what's happening. You'll understand why I frame it up this way in a second. But Pete started talking about, what were you talking about? You were like, the darkness, something about like it's dark in everybody's soul and everybody's life or something like that. And then Justin, you said, do you remember?
No.
Oh, you said, you did the Bane quote. You say, I was born in the darkness. Born.
Yes.
You really embraced it. Then talked for about 2 seconds longer, and then we had to pause the podcast and come back to it later.
And I think you got those reversed because I remember doing the Batman quote.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. All right, so I got it reversed. I'm sorry, you white men look the same to me. So
Not me.
So I didn't realize this until I was going back and editing it. The reason we had to stop the podcast is immediately after Pete said, I was born in the darkness, you merely embraced it. All power went out in West Philly. And the weirdest part about it was, Pete, you were still on the Zoom, but everything else in your house was shut down, right?
Yeah, it was crazy.
That was weird. So we were just watching you running around in the dark, yelling with your girlfriend, being like, I don't know, we don't have any heat.
Do you have some sort of organic Wi-Fi? How is your Wi-Fi working?
It was crazy because it immediately went to the backup. You know, we do Xfinity, and like Xfinity has like a, you know, kind of like a network that is a backup, which is nice to know. But then it was like I was worried because I was like, now I, you know, you're going like, okay, I have like 100% on my computer, but I have to do work because it was a, you know, work day.
Down. You're on a clock. You got 100%
like,
power
where do
countdown.
I save my computer for? Like, I can't just watch, you know, highlights from the Bills game. Like, I have to figure out what's going on, you know?
And we need to tape the rest of the Doom Patrol podcast.
Yeah.
So that was the crazy thing. So we made you sit in the dark and do that. No, we didn't do that. We came back to it later. But it is, do you feel like you cursed yourself a little bit and perhaps all of West Philly?
No, I do not. But thanks for asking.
They call you the curse in your neighborhood, right?
I'm sure a bunch
ever
of
since you
do.
Moved in.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. That's what happened that last episode. Now, to get to this episode, Danny Patrol, we have two trains running here as everybody continues to look for the chief. The first one is Cyborg and Larry head to Danny the Street, which is a sentient street that is trying to be set down by the Bureau of Normalcy. There they encounter a bunch of people who are living their best lives and ultimately send the Bureau of Normalcy back to where it came from. On the other hand, we have Cyborg and Rita are going after Jane, who has manifested a new persona named Karen. Very basic, loves Nora Ephron movies, just wants to marry her ducky.
Worst Karen ever.
And
real she's all that situation.
Mm-hmm. And by the end of the episode, Jane, or at least Karen, has been sucked all the way inside of her persona. Jane seems to be catatonic, and that's kind of where we leave things. Now, I'm very much brushing past this episode because I will say up front, this is my favorite episode of Doom Patrol.
Okay.
Right. Of the whole series.
Of the whole series.
Wait, wait. I feel like, you know, we need to back up the truck a little bit, because what's fun is everybody gets a patrol in the title. Like, we have the Danny Patrol because it's about Danny Street. And then this next is going to be Jane Patrol. It's nice. We're kind of like getting this setup of what's to come a little bit, a little tease beforehand.
I think that's just a coincidence that they're all named Patrol in the background.
Yeah, they pre-named all the episodes. They pre-named all the episodes and then came back later and like, that was a huge surprise to us. I read an interview with the showrunner.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh, cool. It's cool that you get to do that. It really gives you a lot of insight. This was a great episode, and an episode that really had it really stood alone. It took the themes that they've been running through the season, but were able to like have it come to a head on this sort of like a place where you can find yourself and be yourself, and how under fire that is and how hard it is to find that for everyone out in the world. It was just a great theme that really popped all together.
Also, I like how they were like, oh, yeah, if you thought the donkey was weird, you know, you haven't seen the Danny Street episode yet. You know what I mean? Where here's this magical street that can jump places. It's a very powerful ep. It's a beautiful ep. It's so hysterical in so many places. Makes fun of Karens. Makes fun of rom-coms. They do an Endgame joke here for people who are really into Riverdale. Like, I was like, holy shit, this is really hitting all my sweet spots here. It's really a fun ep.
But for those of you that don't know, Pete is a huge rom-com guy. This is a completely 100% true. So this whole episode, I was like, oh, you must have been loving it here, Pete.
Oh, I mean, it was hysterical. The whole, like, yeah, she falls in the rain and, yeah, just hysterical.
Well, why don't we, because for me, I will mention, I love both of these storylines. It really is the Danny the Street storyline, which, by the way, people probably know this, but it comes not the storyline straight from the comics, but Danny the Street is also a fan favorite from the Doom Patrol comics as well, and this is a loose adaptation here. I definitely want to spend some time talking about that, but why don't we move to the rom-com thing and talk about that half of the episode first. So Pete, as our rom-com expert, how did this work? How did this work as a rom-com? Is this like the typical thing that you might see in a romantic comedy movie? I'm not familiar because I only watch documentaries.
Yeah, sure.
Showrunners. We're showrunners.
What an intellectual we have on our hands here.
Yeah, only whatever, man. I know you love the Step Up movies. Don't fucking come at me, bro.
I don't know what those are. Are those documentaries about those steps from the Joker movie, which I also haven't seen?
No.
I would love to get more backstory on those steps.
Yeah, this is exactly. No, I mean, that's what's nice about this is it's playing with some tropes, but it's really different and it's making a lot of. But there's also the tropes that they kind of play with. But yeah, it's very smart, very well done. It's making fun of Karens. It's making fun of just so much. It's just really cool.
Well, this sort of, maybe I have my timeline wrong, but this sort of predates the whole Karen thing, doesn't it?
Sure
does. I think so, yeah. So it really, the fact that Karen was the name was very funny. And just this whole, like, the sort of whole episode built around one of Jane's very particular personalities, I thought was cool. And a lot like the rest of the Doom Patrol, when I hear someone say cool beans, I, too, am suspicious.
Mm-hmm. The specificity of the language that they use through Karen throughout was great. One of my absolute favorite things, which drives me insane in real life, is Rita says something and then Karen says, oh, my God, Rita, you're so weird, which is this thing that non-weird people say whenever anybody ever says something. They also are like, I'm so weird. I do things like having two drinks out at dinner sometimes. It's like, you're not weird. You don't need to profess that you're weird. Just be whoever you are, and that's it. And I do think that also gets to the center of what is going on with Karen/Jane here, is she hates who she is right now. She hates what's going on with her. She feels totally lost and wants to escape that in the most extreme way possible.
Yeah, it's like when somebody uses the phrase like, oh, I'm so nerdy, I read the whole description of the movie before I see it. It's like, that's not nerdy, and like, what are you fucking, you know what I mean? Like,
is that something that people do?
Sounds
pretty specific, Pete.
Yeah.
When people say you're so weird or you're so nerdy and don't really have anything to do with those things and are nowhere near those things, it's just weird to claim. And it's also like somebody who got beat up for those things. It's a little crazy how like people can just kind of throw it around, you know, so casually.
Well, it's just, I think it's more about, it's less about gatekeeping who is a nerd and who isn't a nerd. And it's just using it wrong, to your point.
Yes.
Right?
Like, yes.
It's the same sort of thing. Like you're saying, yes, I'm so nerdy, I read a couple of reviews before I go see a movie. Or like
what?
I'm a total nerd for rom-coms, that sort of thing. Right, Pete?
Wow. Slam. It is people who, I think it's people just trying to see what's, I think this hits on the sort of normalcy, the Bureau of Normalcy. It's people trying to be like, is this weird? I don't know. And it's like auditioning what it's like. Like, I'm so crazy, I went to sleep last night and then woke up today. It was wild. I don't know what is going on with me. And people are like, nope, that's normal. I was like, oh, good. That's what I was trying to do, is assert my normality.
And I think that ties in very nicely. What you're bringing up here is how we get these two things tied together. Is the Bureau of Normalcy, is this new bad for the episode? They are trying to push their own idea of what is normal. And we're getting to see that in both storylines. Even if the Jane thing doesn't explicitly tie into it, it's like you're saying, it ties into what do people think is normal? And I think, like we've been talking around a lot on the podcast, what the Doom Patrol members need to eventually come around to is they are normal. They're normal by being weird, but that's normal for them, and they just need to accept that. That's certainly what Larry is dealing with. Very what?
No, I like the way you said that. It's like they're weirdly normal, and that's normal for them because they're weird.
Yeah. I studied at Lewis Carroll University.
Yes. Yeah, you are a Snickersnack major, right?
I was. The Jabberwock was my PhD professor. I don't know what that's called.
You ran out of gas
there
at the end.
I'm such a nerd for universities.
No, my God, shut up.
There it is. But I do like I everyone this show has done such a good job, and as a first time viewer of the show, like pairing off all the different characters in different episodes. And so we get Rita with Jane and Cliff sort of on the porch with a new robot friend.
Oh my, come on, that was just so magical and so hilariously amazing. The kid going by on his bike the first time and then coming back to a robot breakdance fight with him? Come on.
Well, speaking of Step Up, again, a movie that I'm entirely unfamiliar with, Pete, who won that Step Up-style battle between Christine?
That kid won. Come on. That kid won all day.
Well, it's not fair. You can't challenge a robot to a robot dance.
How
a robot's
yes, you
always
can.
Gonna,
you
a
can challenge anyone you want to breakdance fighting.
I always go into clubs all the time and I'm like, I challenge you to a human battle.
I was just outside today.
Lose every time. You lose
every time.
Challenging
a pigeon to a breakdance fight, and he wouldn't fight me.
That's why people call you the curse, because you're yelling.
I do agree with you. I love that sequence, but Cliff isn't as good of a robot dancer. It probably has to do with the costume, right? Like just the fact that it can't actually move very well in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because cool.
We all three of us agree that.
That's a critic's eye right there. We just really put it together and agreed completely on that. Mm-hmm. But Cliff
honestly,
is left
we can
out.
Get through this podcast a lot quicker if we just all three agreed on everything. Did you like this? Yes. Did you like
there
this?
Goes
our, yes. Podcast on.
There goes our brand.
Yeah.
But I was saying Cliff is stuck on the outside here. And we're really pushing this Cliff-Jane situation. He finally gets to come into the rom-com story, and he is immediately put into the dad role. They're going to walk her down the aisle. So
it's kind of touching.
Yeah. But
until
now
it's like realizes what's going on.
Well, that's the thing, is it draws a line under Cliff very verbally without being like, I want you to be my surrogate daughter. That's essentially what he wants. But when presented with that possibility, that's not actually what he wants. He doesn't actually want Jane or Karen or whoever to be his daughter. He wants to connect with this other person, and he feels like he's already connected with her, but at every turn, Jane is shutting him down.
Yeah. But it feels like the next episode we're going to maybe get a little bit more about that, because the thing of we keep seeing that the Cliff's daughter is out there, but then we keep reestablishing the Jane Cliff relationship as a father daughter relationship. And maybe that's just me looking for a surprise reveal. And
yeah,
it could
you
just
keep
be
pushing
like
this agenda.
I'm not pushing it. The show keeps putting it in front of us. And it may be just how they want to relate because that's where they have missing pieces in their life.
I get separately. It, dude. You know, like you have daughters, you see them everywhere. I mean, it's beautiful. You know what I mean? Like yes. I got, you know, I'm glad that you're happy.
You're so smart, Pete, my daughter, Pete. Thank you for saying that.
Well, let me throw this out at you. Is he maybe trying to connect with Jane so hard because he's scared to try to connect with his actual daughter?
Whoa. Yeah. Wow. Dr. Zalvin just showed up.
And it also, Dr. Z, I do think that makes a lot of sense because his daughter grew up already. And mm-hmm. she doesn't really need a father, potentially. She has one in Bump. Though we don't know how that went. And Jane clearly needs some sort of help. And so I think he's seeing that spot for himself.
Don't call him Dr. Z because I think of Dr. Zedmore on the train there. So don't. Two completely doctor.
No, I deal with the same things as Dr. Zedmore. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
If you need it, just let me know.
Okay, that's great. A New Yorkers only reference. Dr. Z, the dermatology guy, right?
He deals with
the subway pimple man.
And he always looks like he's on the verge of death in every picture.
Yeah, he's not a healthy man. Well, he's so focused on other people's skin, he's letting himself fall apart.
Oh, man.
Yeah, exactly. His skin is just sloughing off. You can see the top of his skull kind of poking through where his skin is slowly just pulling away from him.
Yeah, it reminds me of Rita in blob form a little bit.
Oh, yeah, totally. I hope he doesn't listen to this podcast. Now I'm worried. He listens to most of our other podcasts. I hope he doesn't listen to this one.
This is has always been a Dr. Zedmore takedown podcast. I mean, that guy's heard it all, I think.
Yeah. Just while we're sticking to this storyline, I love Dougie and all the stuff that goes on with Dougie and his family. That is so fun.
Yeah.
I love the idea certainly Karen seems to have this mesmerizing love me thing that happened with her eyes. But I don't even know if she necessarily does that to Doug all the time. I think Doug is just a sucker for Karen and keeps going back to her. And
no, it's clearly a spell. It's clearly a spell.
Is it?
Yeah, because he was like, no, get away from me. And then she had to give him the old eyeballs.
I don't know. Maybe Dougie has the same thing to Karen as you do, Pete, to cookies.
Don't you bring up cookies.
I'm just saying, you keep going back to him.
Are you guys on the outs? You and cookies?
Never.
The second cookies show up at your doorstep, Pete, you're lost. You're gone.
Oh, man.
And for those of you who have never seen Pete, he's blue, furry, googly eyes, always throwing cookies in his mouth with no hole in the back of his throat.
Anyway, Dougie is very fun. Also really liked all the stuff, like I said, with his family. I thought was super fun, both them hating Karen and screaming at him, get away from her, we hate her, to them flipping once they're caught under the spell and loving her. Just a fun storyline overall, even though obviously it does get deeper stuff. What do you think, though, it's saying about Rita? Because they haven't really touched on that.
Was it saying about her in general?
Yeah, this storyline. Because clearly this is saying something about Cliff and it's tying into Cliff. It's saying something about Jane and tying into her.
Right.
But what's it saying specifically about Rita and the place she's in the show?
Well, what I liked was when Karen tried to go after Rita, Rita's response was, I know. And it like just stopped Karen. She was like, oh, you know, and then she had to use her powers on her. Like Rita wasn't moved. She wasn't going to kind of fall for the normal kind of like, yes, I'm all those things. I'm struggling. It's hard. She was pretty. I was pretty impressed with how she was like, she seems like aware of herself in a way that's healthier. I was impressed with Rita in this, she didn't get a lot to do, but even that one little part that she got to shine, it was pretty badass.
And I feel like she's someone who hasn't been a best friend and doesn't have a lot of friends. So maybe she even liked the role of best friend a little bit. She definitely liked sort of being the witness to all of it, I feel like. I love the shot of her with a very full glass of red wine when the family's fighting and whatnot. Very fun.
I mean, you got to do that.
And even though Karen used the eyes on Rita, I do think she was sort of liking where she was.
Yeah, she wants normalcy. Like the rest of them think maybe they want it, but are sort of rejecting it at the same time. But Rita is in a place where she's trying to figure out how to unblob herself. She is trying to figure out how to more regularly be the person who looks like Rita Farr. And so there's a certain amount of comfort probably in being brainwashed by Karen and not having those choices taken away, which is a lot of what the episode is about as well.
I can. Go ahead.
I was going to say, slight topic change, but I love the Dermot Mulroney shout out and insult at the same time here.
That was pretty good. I also really liked the multiple shout outs to the rat from the last episode. I wrote down a couple of those lines. Cliff asking Cyborg.
Yeah, you ever had a rat run around inside you? Hysterical.
Yes, that's very funny because totally reasonable. He thinks they're both robots. So sure, that's just a thing that happens. You have rats running around inside you sometimes. Also, I think this was a Rita line. We all have rats in our heads sometimes.
Yeah.
Very fun true. And the last one, when they cut back to Cliff and the little robot boy having a conversation and he finishes his story and the robot boy says, what does that have to do with the rat in your head? Just a very funny throwaway that implies this long conversation they've had before then. So like that.
And then Cliff's trying to connect. He's desperate for connection. So he's asking a child in a robot suit, like, hey, you're a robot enough to have a rat in your head, right?
And then he's also like, you know who Jennifer Beals is, right, kid?
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm just a little boy. He's like, oh, bro.
Yeah. Well, that kid clearly predates Book of Boba Fett on Disney Plus, where Jennifer Beals is seeing a career resurgence right now. Her IMDb star meter is going way up, way up. And she's going to be the focus of our next segment, Deals with Beals. Jennifer Beals, everybody.
What kind of deal would you make?
We have Jennifer Beals' agents on here. We have a lot of people about to join us. So if you are
not Jennifer Beals, to be clear.
No, couldn't get her. And this is about her deals. We don't care about her.
This is about deals.
This is a business podcast that focuses on Jennifer Beals.
Alex, you mentioned the Book of Boba Fett. Now, you read the original nonfiction book of Boba Fett, right?
Of course. Because
you
don't watch the library. It's a documentary, I believe, that is based on the original autobiography that Boba Fett wrote back in the day.
The autobiography of Boba Fett.
Yeah. All right, I want to talk about my favorite character, Mora Lee Corrupt. I mean, come on, unbelievable.
Yes, come on, indeed.
Some unbelievable quotes. Just it's
fabulosity and incarnate.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Well, the whole storyline on Danny in the Street, if we want to jump over to that,
please,
now is fantastic. Like I said, maybe my favorite thing on the show, the way that it plays out through, like you're talking about the oh my gosh, what is it called? The first part of the episode, the prologue.
The beginning?
Prologue is what I call the show.
Oh no, Alex, you have a rat in your brain right now.
Probably. The prologue.
What's it called? The first part of stuff?
Beginning?
Morning?
Okay, let's talk about the morning of the episode before we get to the afternoon and then eventually the eve.
Good night.
No. I can't wait for a second breakfast.
Just that prologue where we get to see Agent Morris Wilson coming up, eventually finding out, like you're talking about, that he's taken on this persona of morally corrupt, or rather morally corrupt is who she always was. Absolutely lovely thing throughout with some great lines. And it pushes, similar to like Rita and Cliff and Jane, Cyborg is kind of there and exploring some things, as I think. Yes, Pete, what were you going to say?
Well, I mean, what's great about Morally Corrupt is there was like so many powerful things, but also turned and looked at Vic right in his face and was like, no one should have to feel uncomfortable in their own skin. You know what I mean? Like letting that land there. Just absolutely fantastic.
Well, I do love this thing that they're exploring with Cyborg throughout the series where, like we talked about before, he's introduced first as an actual superhero, somebody who is in line to be in the Justice League. But as the episodes have gone on, even though he has that on the surface, he really has all of these things going on in this body, this almost body dysmorphia that he doesn't know how to deal with, that is slowly changing him in big ways. He got that scratch, and that revealed even more metal under there, so he doesn't know what's happening there. So that is something he's dealing with, and he keeps kind of like puffing out his chest and being like, all right, I'm a superhero. Here's what's going on with me. Nothing wrong with me at all. Everything's cool. But Danny and Morally Corrupt definitely see through that. And in those moments when he's standing alone on Danny the street, it really comes through in a beautiful way, to your point, Pete.
Yeah, it really is. That's what's nice, too, is the show is putting ideas out there. They're not beating them. You're not kind of like, all right, we get it. Just kind of like putting things out there and framing them up. I mean, the whole LT in this episode, you know, finally getting to shine a little bit and, you know, like not feeling like he is a piece of garbage the whole time. It was nice to see him like shine a little bit. That whole like going back, the whole karaoke thing going, cutting between the breakdance fighting scene was so sweet and powerful and really awesome. And then cutting back to the, I don't sing, like, oh, just heartbreaking.
That is the sequence to me. It's People Like Us by Kelly Clarkson, and just the lyrics and everything that's going on there, the way that sequence builds throughout, from going from hesitant to go up on stage to finally stepping up there, speaking the lines to singing the lines, Morally Corrupt coming in, it building there, then the camera spinning around, he's human again, but he doesn't realize it, or at least he has his face back again, and then realizing it, the party building, the street building, because we know that Danny the Street has been hiding out and keeping a low profile, so it's this beautiful celebration, and then like you're saying, Pete, the way that they cut there, right back to him with like the mic squeak, and you realize none of this is real.
Yeah,
none of this happened.
Rug pull.
Oh my god, it legitimately makes me cry every time I watch it. It's that moment is so heartbreaking and upsetting because you feel like we're 8 episodes in the show, but you feel like, oh my god, Larry is finally at this place where he accepts himself, where he knows himself, where he can be free. But the fact that that's all in his head and he isn't there yet. Though ultimately, by the end of the episode, he's made these baby steps forward like he has every episode before, is beautifully done.
Yeah, and then it cuts back with Vic showing up and Larry's like singing outside by the house by himself and kind of gets busted. Like, what, am I that bad? Like, so yeah, we have a little bit of hope after we're kind of crushed by the reality of what he's facing and what he's like fighting his inner light being. Sorry, Justin, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
I agree with everything that you're saying. Like it's just wild to me how much this crystallizes Larry's themes throughout the rest of the show. And he doesn't overtake the plot of the whole story. Like this really is like Danny the Street and, Agent Wilson, and Morally Corrupt. That's the story of the episode. And it just happens that it's also Larry's story.
Yeah. Beautiful. We didn't really talk about Danny that much, but I love visually how they do Danny in this episode with the messages appearing everywhere. It's so cool every time. Like, it's a very relatively simple effect. And I say that where somewhere there was probably some CGI artist or whatever, like sweating hours to make these things just look very simple. Mm-hmm. But it... the way that it's executed in so many different ways, I think a lesser show would have been like, yeah, there's just a bunch of signs. And every time it's a bunch of signs, but the fact that they integrate it into the street and into the look of the street with a different place each time is so awesomely done. And visually, it's just so cool to look at.
Shout out to Ghost Rider and PBS Kids Grown Up. A lot of similar vibes.
Absolutely. That's
not that Ghost Rider, Ghost Writer.
Yeah, that was the Nicolas Cage show, right? Nicolas Cage and Ghostwriter.
Yeah, it's where a bunch of kids fought for vengeance against anyone that vanquished them in the past.
Oh, nice. I'll tell you what, I always mix up Ghostwriter and Wishbone for some reason. And whenever anybody says Ghostwriter, we're like, yeah, that's the one with the dog that tells stories. That doesn't make any sense. But
I was Ghostwriter Hive, and Wishbone can go fuck himself.
Wow. Jeez. Oh, wow. Wishbone's probably died a bunch of times by this point. He's a dog.
Yeah, that's a real Milo and Otis situation where every couple episodes they had to swap out the Wishbone because he died over the course of filming. Where's the investigation?
He was in a bunch of dangerous situations, Wishbone. Yeah.
Anyways, to get back to like the denizens, like this idea like,
were you Wishbone or were you Ghostwriter?
I don't know what the fuck you guys are talking about.
Square One, were you a Square One dude?
I can't tell you. Okay,
we can agree on that.
We lost in the weeds. I am. Anyways, I just love this idea of the street accepting everybody and just like giving them a place to be. And this whole kind of like these, you know, army people be like, no, you're a man, you know, just like, you know, no, non-binary fucking just really. I was just really, really impressed by this. And it was done in such a fun over like this show is insane. But it's so great, and it's doing things in such a artistically well done way that it's a joy to watch.
Well, I mean, getting back to what we were talking earlier, I think you're absolutely right, Pete, that, you know, this is the sort of thing that a Karen-type character would look at and be like, oh my God, that's so weird. What is so weird about that?
Yeah.
And yes, it is weird, but it is relatable. And the thing that makes it relatable is part of the weirdness, the fact that they are able to use this metaphorical creation of Daddy the Street to get across the points that you're talking about, Pete, is really powerful and what makes the show work in a very, very beautiful way.
Yeah.
And shout out to Diane Guerrero, who plays Jane on the show, and just how much versatility she has to have and being able to play these like big dramatic moments and also all these this super funny stuff of her falling in that mud puddle. The amount of commitment you see in her body when she dives into that mud. So funny.
I'll tell you what, I am. And Pete, I know you're going to take this the wrong way, but I am liking her a lot better on this rewatch than I did originally. Like, she was one of the ones that I felt like was a little bit of a weak part of the show when I watched it the
How
first time.
How dare
through.
You?
And I eventually came around to liking her in later seasons but I think part of it was I didn't know exactly what the deal was with Jade and I wasn't sure. Like we talked about earlier, there were a lot of split personality things going on at TV at the same time. So divorced from all of that, watching this again, like you're saying, Justin, I think I'm really appreciating her performance a lot more, a lot of the stuff going on with her a lot more. It's real good.
Plus her voicemail at the you know, Doom Manor there is hysterical.
I loved her calling and leaving a voicemail message for herself that they went from...
For Rita. I mean, it was for Rita.
Oh, yeah, but it was Jane doing the voicemail message to be like, hey, if you have any information about the chief let us know. Otherwise, go fuck yourself. And then there was the beef and it was like, hey, it's Jane in a totally different voice. Just a very funny juxtaposition of things.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Any other moments that we want to call out at the episode here? I think we touched on them, but the Bureau of Normalcy seems pretty important. Particularly, we got that tease of them in the last episode. We find out that Larry was forced to work with them for a while.
Yeah.
Justin, as somebody who's new to the show, what's your best guess? What's your theory there? This is a little segment I like to call throwing you under the bus.
Yeah, exactly. Throwing me under the future bus. I can't wait till we catch up to current continuity. I was surprised to hear the name of the agency was the Bureau of Normalcy, because that makes them so specific to this episode. But then I'm like, what were they doing for the rest of the time? It feels like, what does that mean outside of the context of trying to get rid of a place like Danny the Street that helps people find themselves and is a refuge for them. But it feels like they feel like a paranormal. I mean, the logo even looks like the organization in Hellboy that he works for. So it feels like they're sort of use paranormal people to investigate paranormal things and maybe destroy them if they are the Bureau of Normalcy. That feels like sort of a nefarious thing for them to do.
Yeah, and another little detail that may or may not become important later is they work at a place called the Ant Farm. They mention that.
Yes.
And clearly there's a lot left behind in terms of Larry's past and what went on there potentially, because we only get to see them saying they're sending out on a mission. We don't get to see the mission. We don't know how long he was there, any of those things.
When watching this episode, I have a new Larry theory.
Ooh.
It feels like... it seems like the light being is like something other outside of Larry that came in to him. And this episode made me think it is like sort of the bright parts of him. And he's been so emotionally and mentally divorced from that stuff throughout his entire life in different ways. And then the accident, it feels like maybe that's part of Larry that he just has to reconnect with and not an outside force that he has to communicate with.
Interesting. I like that theory. I did want to ask you, Pete, we get a lot. We didn't mention this earlier, but the way that they find out about Danny the Street is through a cake from Danny Cakes in Springfield, Ohio. We get the line, follow the cake, Vic, always follow the cake.
Always follow the cake.
Is that accurate, is my question for you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know what they say, like, follow the money. But, you know, if it's another way of saying that, it's just, you know, the cake is what's the most important currency that we have.
You have a lot of investment in cake, like a lot of people are doing, like crypto or Bitcoin and all that. And you're
yeah,
just
I got
cake.
A lot of freezers where I'm holding on to some cake, bro.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
All ice cream cake, then. Is that what you're saying? Or
always ice cream cake, man. Come on.
Yeah, he bet heavy on Fudgy the Whale.
Yeah.
I hope your power doesn't go out again, friend, because that'll really tank your cake, your ice cream cake investment.
Every March 14th, I buy one cookie opus for now and one cookie opus for later.
That's how you do it. That's how we're.
But you know, the government always wants a piece of cake.
Oh, man. Don't get me started.
Every year on my taxes, I have to report how many cookie opuses I have. Disgusting.
Cookie opus.
He's an alien who's got a ice cream cone for a nose. Good stuff. Any other moments from the episode that you guys want to call out?
Let's see. I did have something else I wanted to say. Anybody else want to go real quick?
No, I was watching you. I was enjoying watching you stretch that out a little bit to see if you were going to be able to come up with something.
I'll come up with it.
We can talk about.
I did want to say one thing. Niles, I like Niles knows Danny. Danny's looking for Niles outside of the first encounter. Danny the Street. I do think Niles continuing to be this this figure who has all these connections to basically everyone. He's someone that we thought was this sort of dotty professor, and now we know that he actually has this much, much more going on. And it felt like, so Cyborg at the end of this episode gets a comic book handed to him, right? Mm-hmm. By Danny.
Yeah.
And it feels like Cyborg wanted to ask Danny about his father, about his life, if he knew anything, but he didn't. Putting Cyborg again in this role of the one character who seems not ready to face himself and his sort of weaknesses.
Yeah, the comic book also on that note will be very interesting to follow, as will whatever is going on with Jane at the end there as Karen gets sucked down into this darkness. The stinger is that the evening of the episode, if you will, is that Jane is catatonic there at the end, so we don't know exactly what's going on with her. But as Pete mentioned, the next episode is called Jane Patrol, you were saying?
Yeah,
so Jane feels Patrol. Like, again, unless this is a huge coincidence, that we'll probably get some more on that next time. Why don't we talk about who was most doomed this episode? Pete, who's most doomed?
Morally corrupt. I mean,
She's doing great. She's living.
Living her best life,
right,
as Allison.
But I'm just worried that this is all we're going to see. Mm. You know, like
doomed
we got
for you.
Yeah, like I just was.
You're doomed.
We got such a happy glimpse of such an amazing character, and I feel like it's over, so. I'm sad that I'm happy for what we got, but you know, I'm sad there might not be any more.
Justin, what about you? Most doomed this episode?
For me in this episode, it is going to be, even though we didn't see him at all, Niles Calder. Like the way that Danny talks about how Mr. Nobody has Niles, nothing seems to scare Danny the Street over the course of this episode. Except for the fact when we find out that that nobody has Niles and Danny's like, bye, he's done.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to throw out Jane. I feel like that's an easy one, but clearly some bad stuff is going on with her here at the end of the episode. And if we are going to get an entire episode devoted to her, clearly that means she's going to end up in more trouble rather than less as we go on. And folks, if you want to support
well,
this
podcast. Before we go, I did want to say, what are your karaoke tracks?
Oh, boy.
We saw.
I do hate karaoke.
Mm.
Same.
Yeah.
You both hate karaoke?
It's a personal hell of mine.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I have no problem with sitting there watching everybody have a good time doing
yeah,
the karaoke.
Yeah, exactly.
So happy.
Go to town.
But every single time people are like, oh, what do you want to do? And I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm fine. Just yeah. sitting here having a beer, watching everybody. Yeah. Like, okay, but you really want to sing and you're scared, right? I'm like, no I'm not scared. I just don't want to sing right now. No, thank you. You feel the same way, Pete?
I feel the exact same way. Other, you know, like there are professional people who sing. There's also unbelievable people who sing for fun when they want. And it's great to watch. But like, I get on stage and perform in other ways. I do. Mm-hmm. I'm good. Yeah. Don't come at me and make this about you somehow. Like, I'm going to sit here and watch. Don't make me get up in there and sing. I don't want to. And also, I'd much rather just be listening to music or at a live thing, listening to live professionals. But if I got to go, I'll go. But it's not as much fun as other people make it out to be.
So I guess then what would you sing if you, and all, now that we have all of that out there, mm-hmm. and you're like, you do your professional thing on stage, which we all know is a full Monty style strip show. what would be the track that you would sing if you had been killed? Because I also don't really love karaoke, but sometimes it happens. You know, karaoke happens. And you can sit and not and sip your beer all you want. Eventually, you're going to have to get up and sing.
Nope.
What's the track? You've never sung karaoke?
Justin is saying,
such a throwaway question.
Justin is saying,
and I thought you would have just a funny answer, and now you're both like, this is where we make our stand. I'm dying on this hill.
Yep.
I don't know. Probably What's This from Nightmare Before Christmas. How about that?
Yeah. Wow. What an answer to pull out from downtown.
Yours? What's your go-to karaoke, Justin?
Here we go. Queue up what? What is your...
Justin's going to be like, no, I don't do karaoke. No thanks.
I really don't. I'm an awful singer. I once sang What's New Pussycat, and the karaoke night ended because they're like, well, no one wants to do this anymore.
Yeah.
We're done here after I did What's New Pussycat because I can't sing.
What's your go-to, though?
I mean, What's New Pussycat?
I wouldn't ever do that again. After that night, that was super clear that you should never do that.
I
agree. Again.
I don't love karaoke either, so I'm like, let's put this to bed. I'm the closer.
You can't, when someone says, what's something you would want to do,
I really do like this idea, though, of finding a song so bad it stops karaoke. Yeah.
Exactly. Let's go home. Let's go to a bar where other people sing, or go to Pete's strip bar where we can watch him take his clothes off.
Yeah. By the way, what are you doing? Have they opened up again, Pete?
This is not a fun bit.
If you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Doom Patrol, iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast, and many more. And now, a piece of advice from Pete LePage.
Listen to the streets. Don't judge people's sheets.
Ooh, this is a take on a poetry element. I like it. The only other piece of advice I would throw on top of that is don't ask Pete to do karaoke with you.
Ever.